Welcome to Life Church. We are an Acts 2:42 community, a family on a mission to bring the life of Jesus to Warrington. We hope you're ready to hear what God has to say to you today through His Word and by His Spirit.
So today I was asked to preach on the road to Emmaus, and I have thoroughly enjoyed researching this. Nick did say at the beginning, you'll be fine with Emmaus because it's a great story. And I had to stop studying in the end because I believed I could have preached for hours. So I encourage you after this. I particularly looked up Pastor Tim Keller and some of his thoughts on it. But there are so many studies on the road to Emmaus. So let me give you a setting. So I'm taking it from Luke 24. I'll read it to you in a moment. But the setting is, so Jesus has completed 3 years of ministry. He's been healing the sick. He's been speaking words of life. He's been gathering followers. He's been gathering some enemies as well. And the crucifixion has happened. He's been buried in the tomb. He has risen from the tomb. Some women have seen him. And these two people in the story, one of them Cleopas, and the other one who isn't named in the story, but is a friend of Cleopas, were there the whole time. So they saw everything going on. They saw the miracles. They heard Jesus' words. They believed Jesus' words to a point of their understanding. They even heard about the resurrection, but that afternoon they returned home. So they walked the 7 miles. So actually what we're talking about is actually takes place on Easter Sunday. The Sunday afternoon, they're walking home. So they set off the 7 miles from Jerusalem to Emmaus. And this is the story. So now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know about the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but they didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all of the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he was going further, but they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it's nearly evening and the day is almost over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took the bread and gave thanks and broke it and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?' They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. They found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, 'It is true. The Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened on their way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread." So it says in the Bible that there were many stories of Jesus appearing to people. So why did Luke choose to talk about this one in so much detail? And actually, as I was working through it and studying different parts, if you notice, some things were in bold, and those are the things that have really stood out to me and stood out to other people. There's so much within this story, but that very first one that was bold, they stood still, their faces downcast. Now they're walking along and they're talking and they're discussing things. And Jesus comes up to them and they actually stand still, don't they? They're walking and talking, but then he says, "What are you talking about?" And it's like you can feel their despair. They can't even walk while discussing it. They stand and their faces are downcast. And Jesus asks more about it, but they are in a state of despair, absolute despair. Now, we all go through points in our lives where we feel in despair, but these guys were in despair without a resurrection. They didn't understand the resurrection. They didn't understand what the resurrection had done for them. Now, as part of my job in school, I always laugh when people say, "What do you do for a living?" And the short answer is teacher. And the longer answer is much more than that. I actually, day by day, I generally have people crying in front of me. It's a very rare day that there's no one crying. It's either a child, a teacher, or parent. There's a lot of crying. It's not mine. I don't add to it. Do you know what I mean? I did say to my colleagues, if you see me crying, something's gone drastically wrong, because I can't add to it. It's just there's a lot of despair. It's a lot of despair. And I found it's so different when there's no knowledge of a resurrection. There's no hope in those difficult times. So when people are living without hope, we have the answer to that in that we have Jesus. I had a colleague of mine. I really prayed. I said, "God, just I want more opportunity to speak about my faith." So it's difficult, isn't it? If you're in a job where actually if you speak about your faith, it can be very difficult and unwelcome. But I was sat there on a residential. So there's about 5 members of staff sat around me. And one of them said, "Lisa, why are you a Christian? Why do you believe what you believe?" I'm like, "Well, you asked." So, and actually, it was a great moment to be able to say, and actually to go back into my head. And I will tell you that as a child, as a 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old, you would have found me in church, because my family were there. You would have found me near the back. You'd have found me with my arms folded. You certainly would not have heard me singing a song. You would have probably found me hanging and loitering around toilets or out helping in the creche or something like that. So that's sort of where I was at. And I went away to university. I still felt loved in the church. The church were my family. I believe God had a hold on my life from decisions I made as a child. But that was not where I was living. And then when I went away to university, I remember sat on my bed. And it's funny, isn't it? As journeys, it's like a kind of it's a growing salvation, isn't it? As you go along your journey. And I just remember sitting there and thinking, I'm here. This is my reality. I don't believe that this creation came from nothing. Nothing of that makes sense. I've researched a lot of things. It does not make sense. It isn't that, and you see, I even said to my colleague at that point, I cannot believe that nothing exploded and created everything. In which to do that, it has to actually break the laws of physics that we actually live by now. I cannot believe that. There is not, we are not, we do not come from insignificance and return to insignificance. We do not come from nothing and return to nothing. And even if you, when you hear David Attenborough and different things, it's amazing how they assign, they can see the intelligence in the design, so they assign it to nature. They assign it to the creature. They, because they cannot talk about creation without there is a creator. It's such a beauty, and it's the arrogance of man that we that I oh, honestly I'm not going to go on, but I so could. Like they searched for a little bit of sky. They decided a little bit of sky. So if you held up a 5p piece and held it up to just a bit of blank sky, and they actually sent something in that direction to take photographs right out into our solar system, and what looks like blank sky, they realized as they sent it out, this probe out, it was just loads and loads of bright light, and each of those little lights was a galaxy. And the whole concept that we even have an understanding of God's creation, we don't even understand the bottom of the ocean. We don't have an understanding. He is beautiful. His creation is beautiful. You are beautiful. Our bodies are amazing. And God, He loves us, and we do not come from insignificance. And He died for us and rose again for us. And that is what these two people on the road to Emmaus needed to know. They needed to know that there was hope. In the second bit that was highlighted, it says, we had hoped He was the one who was going to redeem Israel. Cleopas said that. We had hoped He was going to redeem Israel. See, Cleopas looked around him and he saw the Romans. He saw the Roman occupation. And he was like, that is what I needed to be redeemed from. Because redeem means to break free from slavery. So he's like, we are enslaved to our masters. We are enslaved. We need the Romans gone. I thought Jesus was going to come and redeem us. You see, Cleopas looked at his circumstance and thought that's what he should be redeemed from, what he needed to be saved from. Mary Magdalene, she knew what redemption meant. She understood it was personal. It was about our lives. It's not a, our circumstances are important to God, but we are more important than our circumstances. And sometimes we have to look and think, what is it that actually enslaves us? My dad used to say this line. He said, oh, that we would know, have a greater understanding of what we've been saved from and what we've been saved to. If we could understand those two things, we would live differently. I would live differently. You see, all of us find ways to relieve our stress. So it could be social media, it could be games, it can be people or different things that relieve our stress. But because we're humans, anything that relieves our stress, we then get a tolerance to it, and then we need more of it to relieve the stress, and then it adds to the stress, and so we need more of it to be, and very soon we become enslaved. We become enslaved, and at different points, I know I have had to identify things that are still enslaving me. And sometimes it is literally, I will delete a game. I'm like, no, that is too much time. Or there will be a relationship, or there will be a situation, and then I have to do something about that. So right there, it was that actually Cleopas and his friend, they needed that journey of transformation because they needed to understand it's not just about your circumstances. I was listening to a testimony from a very well-known preacher, and he was there saying he'd had amazing things and amazing trials and tribulations. He'd had both. And he said, you know, at the end of it, you've just got to look and think about your journey and think, am I trusting Jesus more? Am I obeying Jesus more? If the answer to that is yes, then my journey is on track, even if my circumstances are not. If I'm trusting more, if I'm obeying more, God is with me. I'm going in the right direction. Because actually, God is interested in our hearts and our souls and our relationship with him. The bit in the next bit was about beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in the scriptures concerning himself. Who would want that Bible study? Jesus doing a Bible study that about himself using the whole Bible. It is wow. If you look at the Bible, you can look at it in two different ways. You can actually sort of study the facts, the stories, the people, the characters, and that's fine. And the other way of studying it is through the lens of Jesus and actually seeing Jesus in the Old Testament. And one example that I've heard a few people use was about David and Goliath and about the fact that humans see themselves as David fighting. Jesus is David. Jesus is David. David was the champion. So he stood on behalf of the army facing Goliath. If he won, the army won. If he lost, the army lost. He was there standing in their place. Jesus stood in our place. David triumphed in that moment. Jesus died and triumphed. And it's also about then all the way through the Bible. I'm not doing the whole Bible study. Wouldn't it be great though to just go through and see Jesus and everything? C.S. Lewis was an atheist studying at Oxford, and he had like just too many degrees. He's just an incredible mind. And the thing that he actually was an expert on was like traditional tales from all over the globe. So this guy knew all the traditional tales, the tales of creation from all these different people groups. And they didn't have contact with each other, but they all had the same stories. And he was like, this is amazing. And then he noticed that they all had basically the same structure of what was morally correct and what was morally not. And he was like, that's amazing. And he could see all the links. And then he just sat there one day and he was like, what if all the stories that are so similar from all these cultures actually began because of one true story? So that's the only answer, isn't it? It's the only answer is that they've not had contact with each other and the stories are all the same. What if they all came from the one true story? And that was how he found faith. He found the true story at the bottom of it all. The fourth part, then their eyes were opened. They recognized him. Now, if you were going to design a risen Jesus, you might have him, well, at least 7 foot tall, wouldn't you? Maybe shining a bit, maybe in bright armor with a flaming sword. But Jesus looked ordinary. That's why they thought he was an ordinary man right there. He looked ordinary. You find Jesus in the ordinariness of our lives. You see, generally, Jesus is in our lives and he's working and he's speaking, and it's only when we look back that we go, there he was. There he was all along. And sometimes it can be just like a person or a circumstance that's just gently leading us along the road. And I think the thing that I've become better at is actually recognising Jesus in my life a lot more. Even if it's just thanking. I used to laugh as a kid about people who thanked him for parking spaces. I do it now. I thank him for the ordinary things. I have a terrible memory. Jesus is the only reason I have a job. I swear, there's no way, no one would pay me with my memory. Sometimes I like get right up to something and then I look in my diary and go, oh yeah, I didn't do that. Oh, it needs to be done today. Oh, thank you, Jesus, because I would have forgotten that. It's just seeing him in all the different ways. Because sometimes we say, where are you, God? But he's right there. You see, our future is a physical future. It's a homely future. It's a recognizable future. Sometimes we get very... There was this guy, Keith, when I was a teenager, and he had the most amazing testimony of salvation. I mean, there was crime, there was violence, there was drugs, there was all sorts of stuff. It was just an amazing deliverance. And I'm like, and then there's my story. And then Keith said to me one day, I really wish you'd stop, that people would stop seeing that. He said, yours is a story of how God keeps, how he guards, how he provides for. You see, our salvation itself is an incredible story. You don't think, but it's so ordinary. I'm so ordinary. Jesus is in the ordinary too. Don't get me wrong, he does the extraordinary as well. I have so many stories of how God has done the extraordinary in my life. Things that couldn't be a coincidence. Things he's spoken about. But we need to recognize him in the ordinary as well. So, in conclusion today, it's about living with hope in the light of the resurrection. In a moment, I'm going to pray. Because what I don't want anybody leaving here not being confident, not knowing that they know, that they are redeemed, that they are saved, that they are held, that God loves them. It's also sometimes knowing what enslaves you. There's some kids in my school, and it's 5, 6, 7 hours a night on a game. And it's something that's supposed to relax them is hurting them. And right now, there may be something in your mind, you're like, that is supposed to help, and that is hurting now. That is no longer helping, that is hurting me. It's about returning to the Bible to get to know Jesus. And seeing Jesus in the ordinary because he's with you. But you know something that also, the last point that I'm just going to conclude with, is that as these guys are walking along the road and Jesus is walking with them, we walk our road together, don't we? So Jesus tends to show up when we come together. He shows up when we're in community. So go with your doubts and your concerns and your troubles here. Bring them here. Bring them to us. Bring them to the people here. Study Jesus in the Bible together. And then we can understand and have resurrection, understand the resurrection that Jesus brings, the transformation he brings.
We've come to the end of this week's message. We hope you've been impacted and inspired. Keep up to date with everything that's happening by visiting our website at www.lifechurchwarrington.com.